Hello, my friends, and welcome to the Breathcast. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm a breathwork coach and I'm a host. And in this podcast, we get to explore all aspects of health and wellness with a particular interest on breath and how that helps us with anxiety and depression and energy and focus and many other things. And I have got such a guest for you today. This guest is an author, an explorer, a traveler, a hypnotherapist, a clinical therapist, somebody that looks at all modalities, an NLP trained practitioner, and he's my best friend. Scott Lester Woods, I've known him now for 6 years. We met on a Wim Hof retreat back in 2016, almost actually, it could be 6 years to the date of filming this that we became besties. And so I'm so excited to share this conversation. This is a long time coming. We've been discussing when we would do this for many years. And we wanted to make sure the time was right and what we're going to talk about was right and make sure that we bring you a lot of value. So this may well be one of the most powerful and important conversations that I've ever had the opportunity to share. The results that Scott's getting with his super conscious coding are just incredible. The testimonials that he's getting, people with lifelong anxiety, depression, issues that they've been stuck with, and working with Scott for such a short period of time, it's just incredible. Absolutely, truly a beautiful story he's going to share with us. So you're going to want to be nice and comfortable and enjoy this. Scott's also got a lovely discount. So any Take a Deep Breath, Breathcast listeners that want to work with him, he's quite limited with his space. But if you do decide you want to work with him, I'm going to put all of his discount codes and everything down below. So it's my privilege to introduce to you a healer, a therapist, a mentor, and my best friend. So take it away on the Breathcast. Cheers. How are you doing today, sir?
Fantastic, my friend. Fantastic. How about yourself?
Yeah, very good. Very excited. So I'll have already done the intro, so people have already heard this, but I'm so excited to be talking to my best mate on my podcast. It's been a long time coming. And not only am I excited just to talk to my best mate about stuff, really powerful stuff as well that can change people's lives. So it's a double whammy.
Yeah. Oh, you lucky thing, you.
Lucky me. Yeah, lucky everyone. So cool. So welcome to the show. I think what we'll do first, mate, is I want to give people a bit of a flavour, of Scott. So maybe you won't mind just sharing, obviously, who you are is such a big question. Who am I? Who are any of us? But maybe start with what drew you towards kind of well-being and helping people?
To be fair, I think my story is probably so similar to most people's nowadays that generally it starts from a place of pain, I think, for most people. So you know this story well, so it's going to be interesting sharing this with you. But obviously, lots of people are hearing it for the first time. So it must be back when I was between the ages of maybe 18 and 20, 21. So a good sort of 10, 12 years ago. I was what I would assume now would be clinically depressed or anxious. I just thought that there was something wrong with me. Something that I say a lot is that I think the awareness of mental health is just huge nowadays, but the solutions still haven't necessarily caught up with the awareness. So 18, 20, I was just completely unhappy. And I think I say this to a lot of people that with depression, anxiety, with those aspects, it's not necessarily just the feeling or the numbness or the fear that's bad. It's the idea that that fear, that badness isn't going to change. That's just who you are. When people have a panic attack, it's not just this is a bloody horrible thing to experience. It's this is going to happen again and again and again, and it's going to be who I am. And so out of that need, I never went to a doctor. I never got clinically diagnosed because I didn't really know what it was until hindsight, a couple of years afterwards of, oh, wait, these symptoms and this depression, anxiety that everyone's talking about, that was me. You know, I'd spent all day in bed, a good sort of 7-8 stone heavier than I am now, with lighter friends and family. I was deeply ashamed of who I was. And I wanted to work out how to fix what I thought was a broken brain and a broken body. I'm trying to say that without lisping. Broken brain. And so I did what most people do. You know, we live in the most resource full rich age in human history. So the answer's always out there in some way, whether it's through neuroscience or biology or spirituality, books, podcasts, videos, courses, seminars, retreats, big experiences that you can have. And I just started delving into it, just exploring, and was extremely fascinated by people like Darren Brown, who were on the TV at the time, who was doing they were doing things like hypnosis and magic, and just being able to learn a little bit more about not just the brain, but also the body and generally the way that humans work and operate. Trained in a few different modalities during the time, because as I started to realize that, oh, actually, I wasn't broken. It was just that my body, my brain were built for a very particular time in life, about 200,000 years ago, when we were hunter-gatherer nomads. And I've got this same brain and body, and I'm in a society that doesn't necessarily reward that. If you take a chimpanzee and you take them out of the wild and you give them processed food and you get them to stop moving and you take them away from their tribe and you lock them in a box, they're not going to flourish. And so recognizing that, oh, I've got the same functionality as that chimpanzee or that bonobo, that was a really wonderful paradigm to help shift. And then understanding the tools to change, I started training as a hypnotherapist. I started training other modalities like EMDR, EFT, because it's really rewarding to be able to help other people have the same realization. And so I trained officially as a hypnotherapist 8 years ago. Had other experiences during the way, meeting you at the Wim Hof retreat in Poland back in 2016. Wonderful. Living in a Buddhist temple for 2 years, learning about meditation and being in that immersive experience. Again, just so simple, so wonderful, but some amazing lessons that we might be able to explore later. Trying ayahuasca and plant medicines, also another interesting experience. And again, I suppose like all of us, we have enough memories, enough experiences stack up, and then you start to try and work out what's the commonality between those. A little bit like a lot of religions and spirituality and the latest neuroscience, there's generally some overlap. That's what you're doing with breath work. It's actually a lot of these things that these yogis were saying thousands of years ago, they were saying it in a different way, but they were saying the same thing as a lot of these breathwork scientists are discovering now. The only difference is we use hardcore data, and you know, we know about things like carbon dioxide now that we didn't know about hundreds of thousands of years ago. So it's just brought me to today, where I now take the best of that and started to develop a new process over the last 6 months to a year called superconscious coding. And that is probably the most effective tool, the quickest, the most painless, and the safest way for someone to change that I personally know possible from all the experiences and research that I've done. So that's my waffle. Hopefully that gives an understanding of who I am. But hopefully that answers your question.
You know, I think it's only me and you that use the word waffle. I say that quite a lot. It's not waffling, you know, it's a very British thing, isn't it? No,
yes,
no,
it
mate, it's obviously I know that story, but it's so wonderful to hear it back again and for you to share with people. And I can't wait to get stuck into the superconscious coding, because, you know, you've shared so many examples with me, obviously confidentiality, but you share with me the scenarios of what's happened with different people, and it's every time just blowing me away. Yeah, and obviously Wim Hof was a big one for you and me. That's where we became best friends and met each other 6 years ago, next week or the week after, which is just bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird thought.
Yeah.
Very
so
weird time, thought.
Time's flying. But so it's been 8 years since you became a hypnotherapist. I didn't realize that. I was like, what was there something specific that drew towards the hypnotherapy?
Very much so. I was working. So I was a very jumping answer. Very much so, Michael. But no, the answer is yes. There was a very definitive experience that happened when I was 23, 24, and I was working at a financial services company, what I thought was my dream job at the time. I was recruiting, managing, and training sales staff. And, you know, I was reading and watching a lot about Jordan Belfort, The Wolf of Wall Street, and learning about things like NLP, which is something I later trained in with the founder. And what I would do is I would take people to these peak states where they would feel confident, where they would feel euphoric with joy, where that joy would be contagious to others. Using some very, very basic anchoring tools, it's known as anchoring in NLP. It was like you set up a stimulus and then you set up a response. And so when someone makes a particular move, they start to feel a particular emotion. Same as when someone's in the car and a song comes on that reminds them of an ex-partner, that they start to feel those feelings again, or maybe a feeling of loss and they want to change the change the radio. I was doing the exact same thing for joy. And there was one gentleman, it was the first person I did it with, and they were amazed at how quickly they were able to change their emotional state. And they said, you've done more for me in the last 15 minutes than the last three counselors that I've had in 3 years. And so obviously the ego bell goes ringing. You think, oh, that's fantastic. That's amazing. And what I would show people, and I realize how unprofessional this is now, is just how quickly you can change that emotional state. And I would take them from, you know, let's say a 6 out of 10 for joy, for confidence. And I would show them what it's like to be a 10 out of 10. They'd be feeling euphoric. But then I'd take them down to, you know, a 2 or 3 and get them to reenact these feelings of low mood. And you would see them just completely change, and their body language would change, and their breathing would change, and their tonality and the words they were using would change. And then I take them straight back up to a 10 and just show them this is how powerful this is. So no matter what happens during the day, no matter how many times you get rejected, no matter what news you hear, you know that if you can take yourself from a 1 to a 10, you can easily take yourself from a 4 or 5 to a 10. But it was during that process that I thought, you know what? These are just things that I've heard and read about. And yeah, I'm starting to learn by experiencing them, but I don't know what I'm doing ethically. And as well as that, being able to get someone to feel good for 20 minutes, an hour, 3 hours, that wasn't really an impressive goal for me. It was, how do you take someone and help them make a change that lasts a year, 2 years, a lifetime? And so the idea was, okay, I need to actually learn what this is, what are the mechanisms involved, and how can I best practice that to get the results in people that I think they deserve? And so that's what led me to eventually going, okay, well, hypnotherapy seems to be tied with this. Let me train as a hypnotherapist. And then from that, I started training in a few different modalities, and that built to obviously what I do today.
Cool. And so how did that turn into superconscious coding? So maybe give us a bit of a flavor of what is superconscious coding. And
yeah.
Then we can dig into some of the results afterwards and some of the case studies, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So I think to explain superconscious coding, it's probably best to maybe give people a framework of what most therapy is based around, and some general parts about the mind, of terms that I'll probably be using a lot in this conversation, like the conscious and the subconscious and the superconscious. And so the conscious is generally the 7 points of focus you can think of at one particular time. So right now, as we're speaking, right now, someone's listening or watching this, they might not be thinking about the feeling of their feet on the floor until I mention it. And suddenly, oh, that feeling was there the entire time, but now I'm consciously aware of it. So we've normally got around about 4, 5 to 9 points of attention that we can consciously focus on something. But beneath all that, you've got this whole other system at play that's making your heart beat 10,000 times a day, that's allowing you to breathe. Obviously, you know better than most people in the world that breathing is one of those things that happens subconsciously, but we can hijack it and take conscious control over. And so subconsciously, there's this entire other system that's occurring. And so most therapy that exists is based on the framework of a client comes to someone, normally a therapist, it could be a psychotherapist, a counselor, a hypnotherapist, and they're presenting a problem. And the problem that they're presenting is only that of a conscious level. The issue with that is that what we're aware of consciously is based on a massive iceberg of other things. So someone will say, I have low self-esteem. And a therapist might try to dig in. And when they're digging, when they're guiding, when they're learning, what they're really doing, in short, is trying to bring stuff from the bottom of the iceberg to the top. And then based on the stuff that's brought to the top of the iceberg that's at the surface level, that's the work that they do on. If someone does meditation, very often they're meditating based on the thoughts that arise consciously in that moment. Very often if someone's working with CBT, it's what are the thoughts that are consciously arising in that. Counselors will try and dig into the past and fish out all the things that have happened in the past and bring that to the awareness consciously. The issue is that as humans, we're pretty bloody complicated. And so what we sometimes think might be the problem might not actually be the problem. And so we're working on a very, very small amount of what could be the issue, which means that when we're trying to make a solution happen, we're doing it based on the knowledge that's brought to the top of the iceberg. And so, you know, someone will say, I want to feel more confident, or during parts therapy, which is sometimes a hypnotic process, someone will say, I want to speak to the part that's responsible for X, Y, Z. Breathwork is a wonderful way to be able to bring stuff from the bottom of that iceberg up to the surface. I know that you said when you did a recent rebirthing experience, suddenly there was this memory that came up of, oh, when I was at camp and there was this whole thing to do with my stomach and that came up. But that was always there. And subconsciously, you always knew about it, but consciously that was brought to the surface and that was given a realization. And so very often, most therapy is based on the premise of why, and hopefully trying to dig as much of that to the surface as possible, because the idea is once you know why something happened, why something happens, then you can work out how to change it. And superconscious coding is basically, and again, this was a shock to me, because this flew in the face of the baseline of everything I was taught, is that the why is pretty much irrelevant in almost all cases. I've had people who came to me, I'll give an example of a lady who came to me who went through a sexual trauma, who frankly, being totally blunt, could not masturbate without crying. She knew exactly why that was the case. She knew exactly why she had no sexual confidence. She knew exactly why she couldn't go into that next relationship feeling safe in who she was and feeling like she had the self-worth to bring to that to make it a flourishing relationship. But that didn't change anything. And she went through 2 years of psychotherapy trying to process this, to only find out that she hadn't really moved forward. She maybe made the illusion of progress, but actually when she still thought about that thing, there was still residue, there were still feelings there, and it hadn't allowed her to move forward towards a positive future. What superconscious coding is the ability to say, let's not work on the stuff that you're telling me consciously. Let's get another part of you that already knows all of this to go do it for us. Mm-hmm. And this leads on to a really, really interesting idea that right now, as we speak, you've got a son that's away from around about a month of being born, which is an incredible thing to witness. But there is no doctor or scientist that knows that when you have that fertilized egg and it splits into 2 or 4 or 8 or 16, why is it that this cell over here of the 16 or the 32 knows to become a head or to become part of a head? And why is it that this part knows to become part of a foot? The information within all those cells is the same, but where does the signaling start that makes that cell go over here and makes this cell become part of this? And there's lots of different theories, whether you follow Rupert Sheldrake about morphogenic fields or Bruce Lipton stuff about it coming from a field outside. This is still something that's quite debated. But the theory about that is that a little bit like when you cut yourself, your body knows how to heal that. And no doctor or scientist knows every mechanism from the very start to the very finish. We know so many of the mechanisms involved in that, but the very first signal and how your body knows how to do that, that's still in the ether as to being able to know that from the very beginning to the very end. And so what that tells me, and probably a lot of other people, is that your body knows innately what's right for it. It knows what's appropriate. It knows what the right homeostasis is for it to flourish. And if your body didn't, then I would never have any clients, neither would any other therapist. The reason that someone's turning up is because they know something's telling them that something's wrong. No one's ever, as far as my knowledge goes, has ever had PTSD from receiving a kind deed or giving a kind deed to someone. There is this innate knowing of something that's good and, or something that's maybe not good or bad, but appropriate and not appropriate for that health blueprint. And so what most therapists do is they take what we know consciously, what you've brought to the table consciously, and then they've tried to, like a chiropractor, jam these things back into place. Mm-hmm. They try to jam that anxiety back where it belongs. They try to jam that negative thought back. And they've tried to do this normally consciously. Hypnosis will deal with this subconsciously. Sorry, is this making sense so far?
Absolutely.
Is this,
keep going, keep going. Thing? Yeah.
And there was this wonderful lecture, if anyone follows any NLP, it's not a process that I really use much anymore, but training with Richard Bandler was an interesting experience. And there's definitely tools that came out of that. But if you watch any of his early lectures, he talks about a chiropractor who was getting extraordinary results with people. And what he would do is someone would come in and they'd be slightly off balance. And most chiropractors would jam that leg back or jam the things back in place so that, okay, that person's walking straight again. Mm. What this chiropractor would do was he would put them even more out of keel, so their brain would go, something is really wrong. And then the body would just completely straighten itself back up to the way that it was originally supposed to be. And so there's this idea of, okay, there's this innate intelligence within you. When people talk about the conscious and the subconscious, one of the analogies that I always liked was, if you and I are talking at the back of a bus and we're driving down a road and we know that the fastest way home is if the bus driver turns right, but the bus driver keeps turning left, You and I can sit at the back of the bus and we can moan, we can complain, and we can journal, and we might even speak to other passengers on the bus. And every passenger on that bus might know that actually we know why he's going right. He thinks there's an obstacle up ahead on the left, but he doesn't realize that that roadwork that was going on, it's gone now. So he can, he's been going left, could be going right.
Yeah.
But he knows that the obstacle's been, he doesn't know that it's been removed. He doesn't know that it's quicker to go that way. It doesn't matter how much the passengers moan and complain about that. Unless someone talks to the bus driver, then the bus isn't going to turn. And so what the subconscious is the idea of when someone does hypnosis, for example, is it's saying, let's grab your hand, let's take you from the back of the bus, and let's just speak to the bus driver. So once the bus driver knows, well, then he'll go, of course I want to get home quicker. Of course I'll turn right. Just no one ever told me.
Mm.
So that's the subconscious. What I refer to the superconscious as is the very bus station itself. It's the thing that gives the orders to the bus driver and maintains the passengers, that works on the engineering of the bus. So what I do, different to any other hypnotherapist, every different therapist that I know, is I have a completely hands-off approach, because I know that that body, that brain knows what's right for it, and it knows all the things that are wrong, or all the things that are inappropriate for that person, and it knows how to heal them. And so what lots of people do is they'll go in and they'll try and guide someone through a metaphor, or they'll do altered states and they'll try to use particular words to trigger certain positive things. And they'll use that person's conscious language back to them in the session to build rapport, which is a wonderful tool, of course. But what I do is I ask that superconscious if it can see everything that's involved with something. So every memory, every belief, every part, every aspect, if chakras exist, any chakras that are out of alignment, if past lives exist, and I'm not sure if they do, but if they do, we want to make sure we incorporate this. Everything that's involved with, let's say, anxiety. Anxiety is normally a good one. A lot of your audience are stressed and using breathwork for that tool. So as opposed to this one event that happened when I was seven that I'm talking about, it's every memory that's ever been involved with anxiety. It's every aspect, and asking that superconscious to find it. And we set up something called ideomotor signal. So the idea is that person's finger will start moving all by itself to let me know we found it all. And then I'll simply ask that superconscious, is it safe to treat it all? Is it safe today to treat all aspects? 99% of the time it says yes. Sometimes it says no. And I say, are there parts that can be healed today? And it says yes. So again, it's all within the permission. It's all within the field of that person. And then I ask it to treat it. I don't say how to treat it. I don't say treat it at this speed. I say just treat it. Treat it at the appropriate rate for you. And once that happens, someone wakes up and the belief or the identity of, let's say, anxiety is no longer there. It's been healed. And the issue that I've said about this that I've brought to you is that these are the most transformative experiences that I've ever seen in someone. But they're also the most underwhelming. Not for me, but for them. Because what mostly happens in therapeutic practices is someone will make a change based on an old identity. So someone might be an anxious person very often. Someone listening to this will definitely resonate. That, well, I've always been a worrier. I've always been an anxious person. That's me. For as long as I can remember, that's just me. I'm just an anxious person.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll go to therapy and they'll do that to have the behavior or the thoughts of a calm person. But they'll be doing it under the guise of an anxious person.
Mm.
And so they might feel amazing for a week, for a couple of weeks, because they're an anxious person feeling calm. That's a wonderful thing to feel if you're feeling anxious. So to experience that, you know, to be in a heightened state of stress, that's one of the reasons that breath work is such a profound thing and people come back to it. It's, I felt this way, I remember feeling this way, and I went through this process, and just a few minutes later, I feel like this. And then based on the way that we're sitting, based on the way that we're breathing at night, all those things that you know much better than myself, they start to go back to that feeling again. And what this process seems to do, and again, I don't say this with arrogance, I say this because I'm blown away every time it happens, and it does happen. Daily, I get to see this, by the way, is that that anxious person will wake up, or they were never asleep, but they'll open their eyes at the end of this session, after the coding session, and they won't feel anxious. They won't be able to find that anxiety if they try. but they won't even be able to find the identity of that anxious person. So they are completely underwhelmed by the experience because they're not an anxious person that feels calm. They're just a calm person. And a calm person feeling calm isn't exciting. That's just normal. So people go through these experiences, and what's interesting is they still remember logically the idea of being an anxious person. But viscerally, they don't connect with it because they just don't know who they are. It's like if a friend told you that they're anxious, that they're stressed, you would understand that. You don't resonate it because you're not your friend. Mm-hmm. And so these are sort of the powerful changes that have been made. And that's the difference between someone being able to make a change and someone making a transformation. It's all making such a shift that actually it's not, oh, it's like, you know, the clouds open and I was blessed by the angels. It's no, I close my eyes as me and I woke up as me. The version of me that's waking up is the version of me that was always calm, was always confident. And you get to see amazing things. The lady with sexual trauma that I mentioned, 2 years of psychotherapy, 15 minutes, by the way, it took. Yeah. For me to suddenly get the weirdest and most wonderful message I received the following day. I've been masturbating for 4 hours and it's been glorious. And the idea is that, again, she'd been doing this for 2 years. She'd be journaling. She'd be trying different therapies. But the idea was that it didn't seem that overwhelming. It was weird at first because what the hell do you do with this? You know, when that anxiety or that stress has been there like a toxic ex-partner, I don't like it, but I know that they're there. Every time I think about this thing, that feeling reliably shows up. And what do we do with that when that thing doesn't show up anymore? Mm. Right? Instead, we just feel normal and okay. And that can be quite overwhelming. But the actual transformation itself is extremely underwhelming for people. You know, in her mind, she's, well, of course I'm masturbating. Of course I want to be able to do these things. That's that's who I am. So again, that's a very long rant, but hopefully there's some substance in there to be able to pick apart and understand maybe what some of the primary differences are. And why I'm being blown away by this.
Yeah, it's the way I kind of liken it is like when I've got an injury, I spoke to you about it today, it's like I've hurt my back. I was like, oh my God, I'm never gonna do those certain exercises again. I'm gonna warm up every single time. And I'm gonna, you know, eat right, and I make all these deals with God so my back heals. And then as soon as my back's healed, I'm back doing the exact same stuff again because my back's fine. And I'm like, I'm not grateful that my back's fine. It's just my back's back to normal again. It's it's interesting that when you say that, that's how I interpret that. It's
that's the phrase. The phrase. It's not overwhelming because I'm back to normal.
Yeah,
because that's what the superconscious knows. It knows what your normal is, and your normal might be different from my normal, but it knows. And so the idea is, it's completely underwhelming. And we had this conversation, I think maybe last week. If your back was just getting a little bit better each week, you'd still be doing those exercises because you're someone with a bad back who is healing. Mm-hmm. That's very different to someone who feels healed. That's actually my back's fine. So we do those different actions. And obviously it's good to be aware of those processes and continue to do things that we know are good for us anyway. But you just highlighted the difference. Another analogy that came to me the other day is you must have seen The Nutty Professor with Eddie Murphy.
Never seen it.
Absolute sacrilege. Please, that's wonderful tour in itself. And the idea for anyone who hasn't seen it, and again, shame on you, is this obese professor at a school, very intelligent man, Sherman Klump, who Eddie Murphy plays, and he's in this massive fat suit for it. And, you know, he hates his weight and he wants to change it. So he invents this serum that he takes it, and suddenly he wakes up and he's, you know, no loose skin. He's completely in shape. He's what Eddie Murphy looks like, normally. And there's this wonderful montage where Eddie Murphy is just running through the streets and he's saying, I'm thin, I'm thin. And then he goes to an exercise class and he's just turning around to the girls going, oh, it's just lovely to be thin. And then you see him at a cafe eating a sandwich and he's just turning around to all these strangers saying, isn't it just great to be thin? I just love being thin. Isn't it great? All of us, we're just so thin. And he's just eating a sandwich. And it's a wonderful scene to watch. But it dawned on me that, again, that made sense for him to have that reaction because he was, in his mind, he was an obese professor, but he had the body of a thin person. Mm. Everyone else in the exercise class who's in shape isn't making those noises and statements because they're like, of course, that's who I am.
Yeah.
And so please, I urge you to watch that, and especially urge you to watch that scene because that's the difference between someone taking actions in their behaviors and their beliefs, but their identity is still being the same as it was.
Fascinating.
So it's a big difference.
Give us a couple more examples, if you don't mind, of like some of the cases you've worked on, because I'm just conscious, like, obviously I've been on this journey with you. I've known you for nearly 6 years and you've shared these things with me, and it's been wonderful being on the sidelines watching you go through this process and then hearing all these wonderful healing stories out there. Every time I'm blown away as well. I was like, wow, that's so incredible. But I'm just conscious somebody might be watching this now going, well, that, you know, what is that? Does that really work? So just talk to us through maybe a few of the cases and just give people a few more examples of what else it could help with, maybe.
Yeah, sure. So another example, and again, I think this went out on an email, but I'll share these examples first because there's actual video testimonials that people can see for themselves. Sometimes that's a lot more powerful.
Sure.
Hearing it from the person and watching how, you know, as they say the words, you're like, that is transformational, but the way they say it is completely underwhelming. Which is, it at first that was really bothering me, but then again, it's their transformation, not mine. So as long as they're getting the changes they, you know, they showed up and they paid for and they desired, that's all that matters. But now I find it funny because, you know, driving at 0 miles an hour in a sports car isn't exciting. Driving at 200 miles an hour in a sports car isn't exciting either. Feels the same. It's driving from zero to 200 that feels exciting. So when someone closed their eyes at zero, wakes up at 200, yeah, it's, you know, the car's rocking a little bit, but I feel the same. There was another lady, a video testimonial, where she'd had, it was 6 months of counselling, 1 month of CBT. She'd had 2 months of hypnotherapy with a previous therapist in the past. And she'd had, I think it's 12 months of anti-anxiety medication. And then she'd kind of given up for a year or two. It was just like, okay, some of these things have worked. I felt the progress. Some of these things were helpful in their own right, but I'm still an anxious person. We did 30 minutes together of total hypnosis. So one was 15 minutes and we removed all the anxiety. She said, what do I do with this? And then the other 15 minutes, we brought out the confidence that was always there, that was always available to her, but she was able to believe and experience it and know it because now it was her identity. And then what she did is she recorded a video about 4 days after those sessions had completed. And she didn't send it to me for a month because she said, yeah, this is how I'm feeling 4 days in, but give it a couple more weeks, give it a month, see how I'm feeling. And I still get updates from her. You know, it's been another couple of months since then. And she just said, it's so weird to think that that's the way I was feeling. So that's one example. Another gentleman, lifetime anger for his father, extreme body shame, body confidence, the negative self-talk was horrendous. A wonderful example of that was that he would, beforehand, just to, as I started to gauge the how underwhelming it was for people, I've started to ask people, you know, why don't you take a video of yourself, how you're feeling? What he did is he took a video of himself looking in the mirror, and he was just outwardly, I haven't seen the video, but he's got it. It was for him, not me. And he's looking at the mirror, and he's just outwardly saying all the thoughts that are coming to his mind. Oh, yeah, your arms are lanky, your chest is flabby. You know, all these really horrible things that just destroyed him emotionally. And this would happen daily. This was happening for decades, by the way. And we did the session. And when he started to look at the video, the power that the negative self-talk had disappeared. In fact, all aspects of the negative self-talk disappeared. And instead, another voice or critic started to show up. So he'd watch the video and the video would say, and you've got lanky arms. And he would say, well, I'm 6 foot something. Of course I'd have long arms. Like, I look really weird and quite out of place if I had short arms and your chest is flabby. No, I can see that you've got bad posture there. And so it was almost like all the excuses that that part of him had for being a bad person and looking a particular way, they changed to excuses that reflected more reality and reflected the way that he wanted to show up. And he couldn't believe anything else by the end of it. And again, I want to say that these aren't my beliefs that I'm asking people to take on or changes that I feel like they should take on. I'm just asking that superconscious to do what it does best, to bring them back into alignment with what they want. And so all it's nothing more, these sessions, than an invitation for that blueprint to go back to harmony. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Actually, as I say that, it sounds very underwhelming, but again, I expect nothing less now. So it's really beautiful. So there was that. Again, that was 40 minutes of hypnosis because we tackled that. We tackled the belief that he wasn't good enough, and we also tackled sort of the anger that he'd had for family members and the discomfort that you felt around them for years. I've had other people who have had, again, resentment and the control that parents have seems to be a big theme of people who are coming to me at the moment. So whether it's a family trauma, whether it's beliefs that were instilled on the family, whether it's toxic feelings that they have towards family members that come in the form of anger, resentment, sadness, that seems to be happening quite a lot at the moment. An interesting one that happened recently was a hedge fund manager that came to me, and this was pushing the boundaries. You know, I very much set the expectations to say, I don't know if this is possible, but hey, we're here. If the results work, it's definitely going to be worth it. And long story short, they were worth it. To see if he could recognize patterns better, if he could take all the aspects within him, all the beliefs, all the memories, any aspect that his superconscious could find. And again, you know, just to reiterate what I said earlier, this might include past lives and chakras. I don't know. But either way, who cares? The superconscious knows. And asked it to find all the aspects that made him a bad trader, whether it was emotional intolerance, low resilience. Again, they're all based on his terms, not mine. And to see if he could see if he could negate those aspects, see if those parts could be treated, and see if the other aspects that he knew within him, all the other beliefs, all the other parts, all the other memories, could be brought to the forefront. And the next day, I just got a message from him saying, he's been a trader for 10 years, and the day after, he'd had the best trading day he's had in his entire history. And that's carried on for weeks now. So again, does that mean that this is the billion-dollar problem solver? I don't know. There's not enough data out there to have a clue. And I'm also not going to pretend that I know exactly what's going on. You and I both know people in this space. And it seems that the only people who seem to be able to talk with certainty about things like quantum physics are not quantum physicists. There seems to be a direct correlation there. The only people who speak certainly about those things are people who don't actually know the field. However, the people who have the most uncertainty about quantum physics, everyone I've spoken to, they're always a quantum physicist. So I'm not pretending to know exactly what's going on. I have some ideas. And the experiences that people get to have are all individual and beautiful. Very often, when we the very art of storytelling is just good metaphor. Very often, hypnotherapists, meditation teachers, other therapists, even in breath work, you know breath teachers who absolutely use metaphor in their work, whether it's blowing up a balloon or imagining something happening in your arm. It's the therapist that picks the metaphor. Whereas very often, if you're allowing the superconscious to do what it does best, it finds the right metaphor for that person. So I never set up any visualization. I've done this with people who have, I think it's called aphantasia. So they actually neurologically don't have the ability to visualize.
Mm-hmm.
But people have gone into trance and different metaphors will come up for them. So the lady with the trauma, for example, she said, it was like I was in a room and there was all these cabinets there and there were all these beautiful colors, but there was this one cabinet that was really dirty. It was just there. It had no glow. It had no color. I just kept looking at it and this cabinet started to become more and more colorful. And the moment that it became super colorful, that was when I knew that, oh, this is sorted now. Now, I could have maybe have taken her through a visualization to do that, but I wouldn't have known in a million years that was the exact metaphor that she needed to hear. So it kind of takes the guesswork out of it, which is beautiful, because all a therapist ever has been is a facilitator for that person to create their own tools to make changes they want to see. And this just does that on steroids, yeah. That sounds good. And I also want to hedge this by saying I am under no illusion that this is the best thing on the planet. I'm just saying, as someone who's been in the game for 8 years and has always been looking for improvements, this is the painless, safest, and most effective way that I've ever seen this happen. So that's why I speak with such enthusiasm about it, because every time it happens, I kid you not, Mike, I am blown away.
Yeah.
And it's gone to the point where I expect nothing less now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just beautiful. And speaking really candidly, it's just really cool. It's really cool to see that happen with someone and to know that it's possible. Because how long does it take for someone to get PTSD? It takes a moment. And so if we know that the brain can change, and the only reason that PTSD occurs is because the brain's trying to figure out a way to reshape itself to protect and understand the event that's just occurred. So we know the speed and the ability that the brain has to make those very cemented changes. You know, people's lives change because of one incident that happened decades ago. And so that just shows us that the brain already has the capability to do that. It just maybe hasn't been invited to the right door for it to walk through yet. Without the risk of repeating myself, it's just so cool.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. I get it's when you share some of these examples like you have done with me as well, I'm also blown away, and I'm not even getting to see it. You know, I'm hearing it through you, and each time I'm like, wow, that's incredible. You know, it's and obviously I know you and I trust you, and so we've had that wonderful relationship. So yeah, no, it's I one thing that I wonder about is a bit like with breath work, how there's no new breathing exercises out there. They're all like 10,000 years old. You know, we've just forgotten them and we're rediscovering them now. You know, 30 breaths in, whatever, you know, alternate nostril already existed. Do you think that this has existed in the past, or do you think that this is something new that you've put together?
The open door and the open invite is something that's already within us. So I haven't created anything, and I'm totally aware that everything I've done, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I don't say that to be humble. It's because that's just the truth. It's definitely different. That there's definitely overlaps with a lot of other therapies, but it's just taking away the things that weren't necessary. I just think the difference is, the door's always been open. But the modality to show someone to the open door. Maybe this is a specific way. If you look at things like Dr. Brian Morgulon or Sadhguru or yogis, very often they speak about the idea of getting the body and the mind to a place where it's open to receive new informations. New informations. Sorry, that sounded like that's what Borat would say. New information. So I think this is just maybe an easier way to do that in the Western world. I think if opening chakras or energy centers or, meditation is just part of your culture and it's what you've been doing for the last 30, 40 years, then you're probably already there. But I think for people who aren't there, this is probably just a really smooth way to say, I know you've been looking for the door. There's the door. I don't know what's on the other side, but I know the best version of you does. So if you want to walk through it, it's completely your call.
Yeah.
So that's my theory to it. But it's whatever it is, it's wonderful to know that humans are capable of that as well. Again, just
Yeah.
as it should do, it just blows me away because it starts to, again, people have different experiences with it subjectively. I had a lady come to see me for a drug addiction a couple of weeks ago. Bless her, hadn't been able to sleep properly for I think it was 3 years. Without taking particular drugs to be able to help with that. And again, 15 minutes later, she wakes up and she said, I didn't feel like I was in an altered state. I didn't feel like anything happened. I was aware of everything you said. And, my finger felt like it was moving a little bit by itself at times, but completely, it was completely nonchalant, but the results spoke for themselves. She just hasn't done it since. I had another lady earlier this week who said, you know what this feels like? It feels like prayer. I said, what do you mean? It feels like you're praying when that's happening. She said, no, it feels like I'm actually conversing with the divine. I went, two very, very different experiences there. One of them was very underwhelming, still got the results, but the other one was completely and utterly this beautiful, I'm connecting with God. Other people said, oh, I see these colors, or oh, this angel comes down, or all these symbols happen. And some people say, I don't know, that's it. And maybe I feel a little bit weird, or sometimes it feels like my hands get a little bit warm, but
Yeah.
it's completely subjective.
Yeah, that's really, I think I'm just like reflecting on this conversation as it's happening. I'm thinking it's worth just taking a moment to go, you're helping people with anxiety, drug addiction, PTSD, and often in like one or two sessions, you're able to do things that people haven't been able to do in decades of therapy. And I think it's just worth calling that out because that's mental, and you're such a humble person. It's incredible what's going on. So I think for just people listening to this, it's often I'll get people contact me, clients, and it's anxiety and stress, and there are dysfunctions in the breathing, and there are things that we work on that make huge impacts to people's lives, especially in the sports world as well. But then there's
Sorry,
all
Mike,
these.
just to interject there very quickly. But even that dysfunctional breathing, it's important to know that dysfunctional breathing is the body's response to trying to make it functional again.
Oh, explain.
So the idea, why do we start to, when we're feeling stressed, why do we start to breathe the way that we do? is to try and find a way to get back in harmony, right? It's so the body can find an equilibrium. Again, we're not breathing to make our health and symptoms worse. The body's saying we're in this state, so we're trying to breathe to correct that, right? So again, that body knows its health. You know as well as I do, we're born nasal breathers. It's when we put ourselves so out of alignment that it actually becomes an issue that we really need some guidance to bring back into alignment again. But even that stress state, the reason the body is doing that is it's saying, if we do this enough, we're hoping this will shift us back into harmony again. So I just wanted to, I suppose, to enforce the point of that innate health, that your body is really doing this to try to help you in that moment. Whether it's, we think we're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger right now, we better start breathing so we can get ourselves in the position to get away from that and return. So it's all about, I'm going to take you over here so I can take you back to where you belong again. And I think the breath is actually just, not just literally an example of that, it's a perfect metaphor for it as well.
Yeah. I forget if it's Matthew Walker or somebody, but they say modernity. I think it is Matthew Walker because he's got that Manchester
accent. It is Matthew Walker,
modernity.
Yeah.
Modernity hasn't helped us, has it? So you're right. Yeah, we've got saber-toothed tigers all in our Outlook inboxes, just constantly scaring us all day. And so we're just in that constant fight or flight. Yeah. So no, it's cool. So I just think it was worth just calling out and just summarizing the incredible cases and the work that you're seeing. If people want to work with you, what are the options and how do they do that?
And again, this isn't to be on a high horse, but as you can imagine, spaces are just quite limited at the moment. And I know an email went out to some people beforehand to give them a special discount. Hopefully people who aren't on your email list know they should get onto your email list, because you're going to be offering wonderful little offers and rewards to them they just wouldn't be able to get through the channel. But there's a discount that that they could have to work with us, and you know, you and I can set up a conversation between the two. Again, the access to do this, because I'm just one guy at the moment, and I am starting to put together something to be able to teach other therapists and coaches this. For example, even this week I had a therapist reach out to me who was a therapist of one of the people who came to see me to say, I've been working with this person for a couple of years, can you teach me what you're doing to be able to, so I can use this with my clients. I've had other counselors, other therapists who are friends, who, when we're getting together and we're exchanging stories, it's become a little bit of an inside joke of, oh, here we go. Because it's, he always comes up with the best story. And it's not because I'm the best therapist or coach. I think I have a long way to go. It's I'm using the best tool. I'm using another tool that seems to be getting great results. Whether it's the best, only time will tell. But it's that whole thing of, it doesn't matter how good a lumberjack you are, if one of you's got an axe and one's got a chainsaw, one of you's going to cut down more trees. So what I would say is, we'll pop down a little link and people can reach out to me if they want to, if they feel like they would benefit from this, or they would like for me to keep in contact with them. And so when I start to actually properly teach this and make sure this becomes accredited, because obviously we want to make sure it's something that other people can do safely and effectively, and as well, that I'm doing at the moment, so they get the same results. There's not going to be any hard sell. I'm not going to ask them to go to a website, their email address. If you're interested, we'll pop a link and you can just reach out to me and we'll keep in contact until some of these things are set up. Or if you want to work with me, we'll set something up so we can do that. Like I said, spaces are limited. I think on the email list that went out, there was going to be 10 people who I was going to work with. Due to the people that reached out, that's gone down to 5. So I've only got space for 5 more people. So if you reach out to me, a session like this is normally $3,000. But if you reach out with TADB15, we'll just knock 15% off that. But either way, it'd be good to converse anyway. And hopefully this conversation has been able to give some insight, or maybe hopefully a few aha moments of, maybe it's possible. Because like I said at the very beginning of the session, the worst thing about if someone's not in the place that they want to be, isn't they're just not in that place, is that they believe that's what the future is going to look like as well. It's that the hope goes. So to be able to maybe introduce the idea of, actually, maybe there's a step that I have the power to take to be able to do this. And it might not even be through seeing me. I'm not suggesting again that this is the only thing, even if it's just being able to spend time with your own thoughts and ask that body, do you know what's possible? You know, asking your own body, is it possible to begin healing this? And what would it look like if I woke up in harmony tomorrow? And I think that's an empowering question. something that I wasn't going to share, but I am going to, is that over the last month, I just assumed this wasn't a process you could do by yourself, to yourself. I've started to experiment with this a lot. And whether it's placebo or not, I don't know, because I'm just an N equals one person, but I've started to be doing this with myself. And the results have been really, really cool. So again, when more time has passed, I'll delve into that in a little bit more detail, maybe in a future conversation with you or publicly as well. But it's just fascinating to do that. I think maybe one other thing that might be quite helpful is that there are some people where this probably won't work. And if you want, it's going to be harder for someone listening to this, but on a video, we can do a little test. It's known as a suggestibility experiment, just to see how open you are to this process. So the process would be very simple. If you're watching me on a camera, how would you describe that position with your hands, Mike?
Interlocking fingers.
Interlocking fingers, yeah. And so you'd be looking at your thumbs there, and then you'd pop your two index fingers up together. And not yet, but when I say go, your job would be to just separate those fingers and stare as intensely as you can at the gap between. So 3, 2, 1, open those fingers, stare at the gap between. Just imagine there's magnets on either end of those fingers. And naturally, you know as well as I do that magnets pull things together. They attract things, including those fingers. And as those fingers naturally start to attract, you might find yourself wanting to resist, but those fingers will still continue to move together so organically and so naturally by themselves. So eventually they touch. And you can keep trying to resist as much as you want, but the more you try, the more they naturally, that's it, just get pulled together, almost by instinct. And it's quite funny, because you really can feel yourself resisting, but eventually, that's it. It's only a matter of time before they just come together and touch. And that's it. And so right now, and if you just put your fingers together and just give them a shake so they're back to normal. So right there, the only people who your fingers were coming together and they would have eventually touched in some time. I told a little bit of a white lie there. That's not a suggestibility experiment. That's a resistance experiment. So your hands, there's other ways to do it. But your hands naturally, if you put your fingers like that, will naturally just pull together anyway. If you're keeping them apart, it means that there is something within you that is actively resisting this process. Now, if you're actively resisting this process, then it means that being able to work together and get you in that state to be able to make those changes is also going to be a difficult step. My sister, it doesn't work on, because the idea of me doing something with her, she's like, well, you're my older brother. You can't be this guy who can help. So her fingers stay open. My girlfriend is the other person. It was coming together, but there was naturally a bit more resistance than there would normally be. And there's only one client, especially that I've ever had, where their fingers stayed the same. And so that's normally a really, really good indication, but generally it's the kind of rapport that you have with the kind of person you're working with. So it's a resistance experiment. So if you're subconsciously or consciously resistant to the process you're about to go in, then of course, you know, it's a little bit like any process. You've got to show up and you've got to be willing. So this process doesn't work unless you want it to work, but for obvious reasons, some of the things that we're speaking about, people want this to work. And so it does. It's like I said, it's just so cool, and it's really exciting, like I said even before we started, to just be able to share this with people and let them know that it is possible. That, you know, is it going to work every time? Not enough data is out there on that, but PTSD, anxiety, depression, resentment, any kind of trauma pattern recognition, the hedge fund manager, confidence, focus, energy, all those things, anything where there's a part of you that's been offering self-sabotage to you in some way, that seems so far to be something that can be neutralized, that can be taken away. And it doesn't have to take time, and it doesn't have to be painful. So it's really, really, really cool.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I to close us off, I have a little cheesy segment at the end where I ask some quick fire breath questions. It's not a scientific test, don't worry. It's more just your opinion on some stuff. So what's the molecular value of the CO2? So question.
Oh, I've got to go, Mike. Sorry. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be breath related. But what's one book you'd recommend to people?
And it doesn't have to be breath related. Right. This is going to put off a lot of your audience. It's going to put off a lot of your audience because the title is the worst thing about it. It's called Conversations with God.
I knew you were going to say that one. Yeah.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah. The title is the thing I don't like about it. Whether you believe the premise or not, it doesn't matter. It's just a really beautiful philosophy that I've started to integrate, and I found that life is a lot better through that. Yeah. I'm not a religious person by any means. I'm not an atheist either. I'm just curious, like I think a lot of people are. But this was just a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful text to read.
Yeah. Next one is gets a bit cheesier. So if you're marooned on a desert island, what's one breathing exercise you'd bring with you?
I actually really like lymph breathing. I find that so zen, but I still do it each morning. I love Wim Hof if you want to sort of just blow the cylinders out for a bit, but actually just a bit of lymph breathing. So normally I do around about 5 to 6 seconds, hold for around about 20, 24, and let out for about 10 to 12. And I'll do maybe 5 to 10 rounds of that. Normally when I'm lying down first thing in the morning, and I just feel like it's a wonderful reset.
Get that lymph moving. And last question, what does breath work mean to you?
That's a really good question. Naturally, I wanted to say the ability to do what we've been speaking about is to consciously take control of a usual subconscious process to be able to move in harmony with sort of your mind and body the way that it wants to be. And so that's it. It's one of the few things that you really can just hijack that system and say, I'm going to do you now instead of you doing me.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really cool thing to have available to us for free at any time, anywhere, any place.
Yeah. Beautiful, man. Cool. So everyone, the links are down below so you can make a connection with Scott. Scott, any final words you want to leave us on?
Yeah, just have a ruddy good day, everyone. A ruddy good day.
Yeah.
And a bloody good life.
There we go.
It's here to be enjoyed.
There's a, I'm sure I must say this year, but I think it was like Scott Mills or somebody on BBC Radio 2 in the UK. He has a song and the lyrics go, enjoy yourself, it's later than we think. And that always resonates with me. Yeah. So enjoy yourself, everybody. Cool. All right. Until next time, my friend. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. And thank you for sharing this for the first time publicly. That's a big deal. You know, that's a big deal that we've gone out with this. So yeah, thank you for doing that on here.
Yeah, this is. Let's see what the response is. It's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, everyone. Thanks so much. See you on the next breathcast. Cheers. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, my friend, and thank you for sticking all the way through to the end of that breathcast. You're a true hero, a true breath hero. So a couple of bits. So I hope you enjoyed that. Now, whenever I watch a podcast, there's normally so much information. So what I really encourage you to do is grab a pen and paper or get your phone out and just think, what was one or two things from that podcast that I'm going to use right now? Because it's really easy to watch 10, 15 podcasts a week. And then you think, what was that person talking about? So with that one, it was the one thing that stuck with you, maybe breathing slower, certain breathing exercise, something you could go and do, a book that maybe you'd like to go and pick up next. So just make that note, because that is how we make sustained lasting change. And that's the whole point for me here, really, is you're investing your time and your attention, and I want you to get something back for that. So there's loads of knowledge, but maybe we just pick one or two things that we can implement, and that can make big radical change to our life. Now, whether you're listening to this or watching this, if you've enjoyed these free podcasts, I would love it if you could leave me a review on iTunes or on Spotify. And if you're just watching these on YouTube, if you could like, subscribe, and share, and leave a comment, because what I'm really trying to do is grow this community, because the more people that watch this and leave reviews, the bigger guests I can get, the more powerful guests, the more people that will give us more information so we can share that with our friends and family and implement it in our own lives. So just taking a few moments to do that would be a great appreciation. We've got some wonderful reviews on iTunes already, so if you could add to that, I would really appreciate it. And then on top of that as well, I spoke during this podcast about my breath course, so I won't go through all that again now. But if you're looking to make change, sustained change in your life, that's what I'm all about here, is stickiness, they all sometimes call it. So remembering stuff, Tony Robbins is big on this, is how do I remember and implement and make changes? And one way to do that is take my breath course. So it's free 30-day money-back guarantee. My heart and soul got poured into this. I've used stuff from The Oxygen Advantage and Potato and all my 50-plus podcasts to go, what is the key stuff that somebody newish to breathwork needs to know to make radical changes in their life? And that's in that course. So Link is down below. There's a little discount code for you there as well, because you've come through Take a Deep Breath and the Breathcast. So check that out. And we're on Instagram. We're almost at 3,000 people. I'm going to be doing some morning breath work on there. So if you are interested in free live breathing with me and we can interact, then hop on over to Instagram, takeadeepbreath.co.uk. Okay, and finally, have you got your free cheat breathing sheet yet? I put together 7 essential breathing exercises for a happier, healthier life. That's completely free. Just go down there, click that link. That'll be sent to you in your inbox straight away. It's all little links on there, so you can go to the breathing exercises. And it tells you the what, the why, and the how, because often we look at a breathing exercise and think, well, that's very good, but what's the point? So I've detailed it really clearly for you as to this breathing exercise does this, that breathing exercise does that. And you just know basically what to do when. So if you're trying to get to sleep or get more energy, all those wonderful things. Thank you for sticking all the way through to the end. Now, what do you do next? I've given you loads of stuff there. Well, maybe we need to breathe. So why don't you click on this link here? It's a beautiful breathing exercise. Relax us, calm us down. And you might be in the mood for another breath cast because you're just hungry caterpillar for more breath information. So check this out here. And I will see you on one of these 2 videos next. Thank you so much. Cheers.